No Borders, No Boundaries. Written by Robert C. Brewster. Narrated by Robert C. Brewster. Book 1, Chapter 1. Friday, June 8, 2001. The theme music played us out, and Kenny's thumbs told me we were officially off the air. I thanked Mayor Turnbull and said I'd walk him out of our new smoke-free building, since I needed one. I was done for the night and looking forward to my three-week Vegas vacation. A small crowd of vocal protesters had gathered outside the office building that housed our ground-floor studios. They were there to confront the mayor, who was embroiled in a housing development project that was turning out to be very controversial and pissing off a lot of the wrong people. His worship had wisely decided to slip out a basement exit at the rear of the building. From there, it was only a 2-minute walk to his office, where he'd told me he was planning to burn the midnight oil. I was headed for the same back exit when I realized I had forgotten my smokes. As the noisy crowd outside gathered around the mayor's waiting limousine, he and his bodyguard, Jake Johnson, made their hasty, unseen departure. I was just a few seconds behind them as they stepped out into the darkness. I opened the back door and then saw what I saw. Witnessing the murders I could have lived with. Saying, "Hi," and waving to the two guys who did it was another story. As I was inhaling deeply on the first puff of my cigarette, I looked up and saw the mayor and his bodyguard get the back of their heads blown off. I choked on the exhaling smoke. The taller of the two assassins looked at me and pointed a very large gun at my face. We were about 15 feet apart. I was dead meat. Then we both heard the scream from above. He turned to look. I ducked behind a pillar as his shot ricocheted off a concrete cylinder and some fragments cut my forehead. Other screams rapidly followed the first as people began appearing at street level, looking down to where they had heard the shots. The sound of the two shooters' footsteps running away made me instantly decide to slip away before the police arrived. I stepped back into the building just in time to catch my producer Kenny on his way out. I dragged him into my office and told him what had just gone down. Within minutes, the building was buzzing with the news. 30 minutes from now, the world would know who had been killed. Visibly shaken, I sat behind my desk and pulled a fifth of scotch out of my bottom desk drawer.
"Look at you, man. You're shaking like a leaf. You're going to crack up if you don't get away from here now."
"Taking advice from you on my mental health, Kenny, wouldn't be wise," I said, taking a healthy swig from the bottle.
"You know, most times I'd agree with you, but this is that one time you're dead wrong. You just witnessed a mob hit, for Christ's sakes. You got to disappear for a long while, or you're toast, man. They'll turn the whole fucking country upside down if they have to. You should go to Europe. You got a passport?"
I nodded and let Kenny ramble on for another few minutes while I thought about getting away. I needed to vanish. Europe was a bad choice. Anywhere I had to use my passport wouldn't work. Mob people could find me anywhere in the world in a nanosecond if they really wanted to. Had to be someplace where they wouldn't think to look. There was. After Kenny finished his tirade, exhausted, he left my office. I picked up the phone, thought better of it, and replaced it in the cradle. I took a taxi home and quickly packed up whatever I could into a large sports bag I kept in my closet. I put my hand into the laundry hamper and reached down to the bottom of it, where I retrieved an old brown leather wallet. Inside was $10,000 in 50s and hundreds, my Vegas bankroll I had planned to turn into millions at the crap table. I tossed a few of my favorite mementos and knickknacks into the bag and gave the place a quick going over, and was about to close the door and lock it when I remembered that I should call Kenny. I knew he wouldn't be there yet, but I left a message telling him to take the spare key in my office desk and help himself to whatever he wanted in my apartment because it didn't look like I would be coming back anytime soon. I closed the door for the final time and took the elevator down to the basement.
I put my belongings into the cab of my truck and then locked it before going out the basement entrance and walking over to the payphones in the strip mall across the street. I made a couple of discreet phone calls and talked to my Uncle Leander, who hooked me up with my cousin Mark, and in a flash I was off to Au Bout du Monde, the end of the world, as the French say. I got in my old Chevy pickup and headed north to Canada. When I finally arrived in the Le Petit Village, I was exhausted and ready for some serious R&R. I had driven 2,400 miles in 3 days. It was 11 p.m. and I had been on the road nonstop since 8:30 that morning. The key was under the right front step like my cousin said it would be. I unlocked the door and flipped on the kitchen light and gently laid my sports bag on the floor and unzipped it. I retrieved 2 bottles of double-cask single malt whiskey and placed them on the counter. I fumbled around in the cupboard for a suitable glass. Found one. I opened the bottle and filled the glass halfway and went out to the front porch with my scotch in hand and sat down on this old rocking chair and thought about why I ran here from there. I'd accidentally witnessed an execution. Paul Turnbull, mayor of Washington, D.C., and Hall of Fame running back for the Redskins, dead in front of my eyes. I just happened to be doing my job. Did I mention that yet? My job. I interview retired sports celebrities for the Classic American Sports Network. Haven't heard of it? I'm not surprised. They're a little obscure. They hired me sight unseen when I sent them a pretty crafty letter telling them that being an ex-private eye and avid sports fan, I would be the perfect person to ask all the tough questions. I sent the resume in as a joke, but a few weeks later, some young hotshot from CASN calls me up and hires me over the phone. That was 5 years ago. The network folded after 2 years. Me, I kind of lucked out. This dot-com company bought my contract and relaunched my show on the internet. There I was live every weeknight from 8 to 10. My face and voice streamed around the world and all its time zones to your home computer. Why didn't I stick around and wait for the cops? Because doing so would be like signing my own death certificate. The cops knew who ordered the hit on Turnbull before it happened. He was fucking with the wrong kind of people. I saw one of the shooters and he saw me. I was the only one who could identify him. If I did, in all likelihood, the cops could tie him to Pete Peepers Palermo, a crime boss who controlled a large portion of the drug and shylocking trade in D.C. For 30 years, he'd been in the news and under investigation for one thing or another. 30 years of exposure and not even a single traffic ticket. I figured they had less than 2 weeks to find and eliminate me. Otherwise, they would have to make the 2 shooters disappear. Even then, if they were known associates of Peepers and had rap sheets, I could still identify one of them after the fact. I was screwed and couldn't foresee any scenario that would allow me to safely go back to Washington and resume my life, except one. Peepers would have to fuck up. Something he'd never done before. But I can manage to pull off on a daily basis. I was screwed. Now I was sitting on a porch in the middle of nowhere, sipping 12-year-old scotch and reaching into my shirt pocket for a Cuban when I first spotted him out of the corner of my eye. My initial reaction was to dive for cover. Something told me not to. "Fog-covered moon tonight. Smells up like rain soon," the stranger said. "How soon?" I said, smiling. "More than later," the stranger unassailably smiled back. "Sooner the better," I said confidently, feeling like a local. "Sure be the truth, boy. You stay here now?" "Yeah, for a week or two," I said, pulling a Monte Cristo No. 1 out of my shirt pocket and fumbling in my pants for my lighter. I found it. "I'm here, boy. Always here. Always here since I rose from the dead. Rose from the dead, I said," he said before flashing me one of those wild Jack Nicholson grins. I fired up the Cuban. "Amen," I exclaim, pausing long enough to enjoy the sweet aroma and fragrance before realizing that I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. I did know, however, that for the first time in days, I started laughing, and it felt good. My new best friend laughed too, and then I was, well, you know, laughing at him laughing. I noticed he was backing away from me as I sipped my scotch and pulled on my cigar. "Care for a drink?" I said with my warmest smile. He shook his head and took another step backward toward the road. "Is there something wrong?" I asked him. "Smoke," he said, stepping back one more step. "It'll kill you." "Sooner or later," I answered. "Sooner for you than me, no doubt, unless I stand too close to you there, boy." We both chuckled and then looked out silently into the darkness. "Always this quiet and peaceful around here?" I said, enjoying the cool night air with all its accompanying sounds. "Quiet, yes. Peaceful, no." Before I had time to respond, he was gone. His back came into view as the porch light from his house across the dirt road illuminated his distinctive silhouette. I'd assume that this man was one of the two brothers my cousin had told me about who lived across the road. These were the ones who took care of his place when he wasn't around. Seemed like a harmless fellow. I went back into the house and replenished my beverage. Back out on the porch, I stared into the horizon and wondered, is this the kind of place I'll be forced to live in? Will I have to go to an even more isolated area? Could they find me? Would they find me in St. Joseph de Marchois? The fog was beginning to lift, and I could now see the reflection of the moon glimmering on the ocean waves. The coastline came into focus. I saw the bay off to the right and the train bridge with three trusses that separated the two. My cousin was right. This truly was God's country. It might not be too bad spending my life in such a place. I could think of a lot worse right now. In the morning, I was sure the view would be spectacular and my head would be clear. I was tired. I drained my second scotch and decided to go to bed. I'm sure I was asleep before my head hit the pillow, but I don't remember because I was that tired.